Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Back and better than ever, Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. Oh, what a day we've got working. There was yelling, there was disagreement, and once again, Greeny's genius was proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. That's what we did on Get Up this morning. I can't wait to see what the next 2 hours has to bring.
Here we go!
Only one place to start.
Our one place to start is with football and our good friend, Mr. Jeff Saturday. Good enough to hang out after we wrap up, Get Up, and spend some time talking football with us here. Thank you, as always, Jeffrey.
Love doing it.
So here's my issue. All right, so we got into a bunch of different stuff today. We got the monster game coming up this weekend, Dallas-Philly.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll spend some time talking about that. We got this just mayhem going on with the Jets and Zach Wilson. We'll get into that. We got Lewis saying a fascinating thing today about the Bears and Justin Fields. We'll get into that. But I want to start with the point that I was making about Josh Allen. This has become something of a topic on this show. So I want to take you back through the sands of time to last week. I get home from Europe sick as a freaking dog. I watch the Eagles play the Bills. I watch Josh Allen play what I thought was as good a game as any quarterback in the NFL has played this entire season. Of all the games I've watched, I haven't seen a quarterback play a better game. The next day, unfortunately, I'm diagnosed with COVID, and so I'm not coming into work. And I am besieged with texts from people telling me, Greeny, they're killing Josh Allen on your shows. Everyone on the shows is talking about Josh Allen lost the game. Josh Allen did this. Josh Allen threw one interception in the second half, and that's the reason the Bills lost. And I've been trying to figure out a way for this to be crystallized in my mind, and here's what it is. I feel like Josh Allen is blamed for the Bills' losses more than any of the other elite quarterbacks are blamed for their team's losses, despite the fact that, in my opinion, he does at least as much, if not more, than any of the rest of them to have his team in a position to have any chance in the first place. I should have said it that way. You know, sometimes you have more time to think it through.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say. What do you think?
Yeah, I appreciate the sentiment of he's doing more to because if you looked at the game, he was their leading rusher against the Eagles, obviously the passer. I think the issue for players and for people who are analyzing the game, as we have been I don't know if trained is the right word, but turnovers to us are one of the key factors to wins and losses in the NFL. And so when you assign positive plays, whether it's touchdowns, if a player continues to turn the ball over, you will focus more on the negative side than the positive side. Because as well as Josh Allen played, fast forward to the fourth quarter of that game, he throws an out that gets jumped. It's an interception. They end up losing the game. Now, you can always go back and say, hey, he had his team in positions to win. You know, they have 12 on the field, and I agree with you 100% on all that. The issue for Josh Allen, though, is, and especially in big games and big moments, turnovers are it is the most applied to quarterbacks. The most negative thing you can say about any quarterback is that he's prone to turnovers. And Josh Allen has been prone to his entire career. And so no one is giving him that pass. Like, they would give Patrick Mahomes the pass because he avoids turnovers to a large degree. They would give the benefit of the doubt. Even Lamar Jackson gets some of this. When he turns the ball over in the fourth quarter, like, their losses this season have been because of poor performances late in games, right? And so I think that's what it is. So as good as Josh Allen is, and I agree, he's a MVP or slash elite type player in the NFL year in and year out. But he has to carry the blame because he's going to get the credit. And so, you know, for you feeling bad because he's getting blamed, I think he's a little misguided.
What do you think, Hembo? Give me some numbers here.
I'm on your side here, Greeny, because I understand the notion that turnovers are a fatal flaw. But truthfully, they're not. We are just trained, like you said, to believe
right. That
turnovers equals the worst thing in the world. When in reality, sometimes you have to live with the turnovers because of what happens on the other side. So
right.
What I like to do.
The risk reward.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I like to do, Greeny, what I like to do, Jeff, is look at both. I'm looking at the touchdowns and I'm looking at the turnovers because the differential between the two is the most important number. This year, only Dak Prescott's is better. Over the last two, only Dak Prescott and Jalen Hurts is better. And over the last three and four, only Patrick Mahomes is better. So what I'm saying is, if you're only looking at Josh Allen's turnovers and you're pointing to one specific thing, you're missing the forest through the trees, because this is a top five offense. Is a top five quarterback by any other standard of measure.
Agreed.
Even if you bake into the cake what their turnovers are, and that doesn't even take into account the fact that they rarely put the ball in the belly of a back. And as you said before, Jeff, right now he's playing across the worst defense he ever has.
No doubt. Yeah, because he had the number one for 5 years, and they decided to fire that guy, right? So that, I mean, that's on them. But I will say this about it: not all turnovers are created equally, right? Like, I don't mind the first quarter shot play you try to take that might get intercepted. Where I would say that I would have to look at all turnovers would be, when are they occurring? Like that fourth quarter one against the Eagles, that's a bad ball. Like that's not just that is a mental error, right? So to me, I would equate that to, mm-hmm, I just decided to block the wrong guy on a play. Like that wasn't a quote competitive play. Like the ones that you're talking about, like where it's like a bang, bang, got ball, gets tipped or gets picked, those kind of things. But when a guy makes, to me, like a mental error and throws a really bad ball at a real inopportune time, that's where I would assign it more to him. Because if I did it and I just turned my back and let a guy run straight in and he crushes Peyton Manning, everybody would be like, you're the reason we lost the game. I assign the same to me depending on what that turnover looks like.
I understand that. Is that something that could be, like, can we focus it in on just second half or just fourth quarter? Or
we can split it how we can split it however we want, but even when we take into account all the things,
yeah,
right
his,
now,
his is the ratio part, right?
The ratio, and when you take into account all things, like we have ways that blend all these things and stir them in a pot and spit out numbers.
Right.
Using our points above average metric, which is just one way of saying how much value have you added in relation to a sort of average quarterback, Josh Allen is literally first in the NFL this year.
Yeah.
And if he was on a 9-3 team with a top 10 defense, we'd be having the conversation, is he the MVP or is Brock Purdy or Jalen Hurts or Dak Prescott?
Greeny, yeah. Presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle motorcycle, RV, and boat insurance. Visit progressive.com. So,
let me come at this for one second, because yeah. I will say this about him. But one thing I do love about when I get to be here and hear these kind of things from the analytics side, one thing that went in my coaching experience last year in Indy, one thing that I realized, because you are, as a player and as a coach, trained about turnovers and momentum and all these kinds of things. But I would say this, the area that I didn't know was as impactful as it was, explosive plays are much more of a determining factor than turnovers. And that was never – Like I'll put it like this. When I was with Tony Dungy, who's in the Hall of Fame as a coach, Tony Dungy, he had like Tony's top five, right? Like top five special teams, top five penalties, right? All these things. But he always ended it, the two were make big plays and don't give up big plays. And those would be like assigned a run over 10 yards, a pass over 17 yards, whatever that is. And when you looked at it, when we won the explosive plays more often, the turnover side didn't matter nearly as much. If our explosive plays were the same, then turnover. But I never looked at it, and I would tell you going back now, explosive plays are really the metrics you should watch to see teams who win. Guess who leads the league right now in explosive plays? San Francisco. 105 explosive plays, right? Leads the league, and they've only given up 53. Himbo gave me that this morning, right? For another discussion. But what I realized is we don't care about turnovers, bro, because if they're having those kind of, they're making up for the turnover by having those type of plays and scoring points.
Because an explosive play either puts you in the end zone or puts you in scoring position.
Yes.
Like, this is a little advancedy, but we're going to do it anyway because we're talking about this. So Dan Orlovsky and I have this handy dandy sheet.
Yeah.
Color coded, all sorts of stuff, lots of data points. What we found were like the five most important determining factors of offense. Like in the modern NFL, what are the five things that you have to get right to be successful? And none of them are turnover avoidance. We have big plays. We have avoiding negative plays,
yes,
like sacks.
Yes, yep.
How good you are on first down.
Yep.
How effective are you when you use motion? And can your quarterback win outside of structure when the offensive line loses?
Yeah.
Because turnovers are random. Avoiding turnovers isn't a strategy.
It's impossible.
It's just something that you want to do.
Yes.
So let's get the big things right that we can control. And Josh Allen does that about as well as any quarterback in the NFL, not named Patrick Mahomes.
So the only thing again, I don't mean to push back against myself because this is my argument that I'm trying to make here. But there is, I mean, there is avoidance of negative plays. I mean, there is no more negative play than we have the ball and now they do. So I find it hard to imagine we shouldn't be including turnovers in negative plays.
Right, but how often you allow a sack, which is how we're defining that stat, is something that you can be really good at or really bad at over a durable period of time. Jeff was on some of the best offensive lines ever, and Peyton Manning rarely got sacked. And those are like 50, 60, 70 more plays a year where your Hall of Fame quarterback can do something good rather than 3, 4, 5. Like, because turnovers are random and chancy, too, because like Josh Allen had a turnover 3 weeks ago that was tipped at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Is that his fault?
Yeah.
What if his receiver drops a pass and it you know, deflected to the safety?
Yeah.
It all counts the same in the quarterback ledger. Turnover one, right? It's too random. It's too chancy for us to say like, oh, this is a fatal flaw without taking into context every single thing like you said, like time and score and field position and all the rest of it.
All right, Greeny with Jeff Saturday here in studio and such interesting stuff all over the place here. We live, as always, at the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. Quickly, if you were watching the Pat McAfee show yesterday, right here in this studio, right here on our Seaport, Aaron Rodgers was in here, and he had a lot of things to say about the leaks that are coming out of the Jets and all kinds of things. Very quickly, I will just say that I have known Diana Russini forever, and I 100% trust what she is reporting. I can't tell you with any insight what exactly is and isn't happening there with the Jets, but the more important point, I think, once again, I totally support her reporting. Having said that, what Rodgers is talking about to me is really much less about the reporting
100%.
Than it is about where it comes from.
Yeah, in the building.
In the building. That's what I'm saying, is that Diana is reporting things that she is being told. Of that, there is no question.
Right.
And Jeff, you played on great teams. When you've got leaks, when you've got stuff coming from the inside, like what is that like?
Poison. Listen, there is no way to be successful when that's happening. And I'll put it this way. Bill Polian, who's in the Hall of Fame, used to work for ESPN. He was my general manager for 13 years. And he had a one-voice principle. And he would address the team one time a year, and that's what he would talk about. And he would say to the entire team, we don't leave this building without unity. I don't care if you like it, you dislike what. Once we've agreed on what the unity that we're having in this building, and what the Jets are doing is they are cutting their own Achilles, no pun intended for Aaron. But like when you think about because now what you have is mistrust in the locker room. You have mistrust. Is it a coach? Is it players? Is it so now you don't know. So when you walk in, you feel like you're walking into a minefield. You don't know who you can trust, who, what media, what beat writers, what, you know, all of those things come into play, because at the end of the day, insecurity with a team like this is going to prevail. Players know that when coaches get fired, they get fired. So they're trying to find their own little homes now, and they're trying to have their own little groups they can go, you know, link up with and be protected with, and all of those things do nothing to the finished product of trying to win games. So what Aaron is saying about, hey, we got to figure it out in the building and stop it, that is an absolute fact. It ain't the reporter. Don't blame that. It's coming out of the building for no other reason than to, you know, to sow disunity and distrust, which nobody can succeed with.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I've known Diana long. I mean, she's not making this up.
No, what?
Literally zero chance that she is making this up. This is stuff she's being told by someone, and the issue is the telling.
That's right.
So you can shoot the messenger all you want, but at the end of the day, the problem is the message.
Yep.
And it coming out of there. I can't fathom just how quickly and how badly that thing has disintegrated in so
Brutal.
Many different ways. All right, I'll get into the Justin Field stuff as we go. You were the best, Jeff. Thank
love
you.
Love y'all, man.
Oh,
great
but quickly,
here.
Quickly.
Yes.
That breakfast today.
Fantastic. Start of the day right.
So I took a picture of it. In fact, I'm going to put that picture on Instagram.
You had to zoom out because the spread was so wide.
If you go, I took this photo. If you go to my Instagram at ESPN Greeny in about the next 3 minutes, I will post it. You ordered. How would you describe your breakfast?
My typical. That's typical breakfast. It's the meat lovers, hungry man's omelet. It is two eggs over medium, and it is. It was a beef sausage.
A pig roast. It was aggressively large.
It was the most food. It was the most food I've ever seen. Are you on Instagram?
No, I'm not on Instagram.
Okay, so I can't even tag you. It was the most food I've ever seen a person eat in my entire life. And it was all meat and eggs.
Tag out Joey Chestnut in the post.
Getting that protein. Go. Listen, you got to eat like a king, you know, for breakfast, the prince for lunch, and the pauper for supper, man. It's just the way it goes. You keep this thing lean
you
and
do
mean.
Look pretty husky.
Fight machine. Right, you know what I mean?
It is loading right now. So, and it is up. So if you go to Instagram right now, at ESPN Greeny, Greeny with a Y, you will see the happiest man you've ever seen in your entire life.
So good.
Eating what would literally constitute breakfast for me for a month.
The unhappiest farm you've ever seen in your life.
You got to have a lot of energy on these shows. You got to bring it, man. Right. And here's the thing. Dominique Foxworth eats a massive breakfast and he is the thinnest human being on the planet.
He's got
metabolism like nobody's business. I'm just trying to get on that page. That's what I'm trying to work through.
Remarkably well done. We're back in a moment on ESPN Radio. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Greeny, the podcast.
All right, Greeny with you on ESPN Radio. So I got two social media things that we will get into in a minute here, in 30 seconds after this word from Vivid Seats. One of them is funny, and the other one aggravates me no end. So we will do this in 30 seconds after this word from Vivid Seats. Bowl season, basketball, hockey, pro football, all in action. Vivid Seats has it all for you and your ticket gifting needs this holiday season. See every one-timer, every touchdown, every slam dunk live and in person with great deals on great seats. Plus, with Vivid Seat Rewards, you earn rewards with every purchase. They're here for us fans, offering unbeatable rewards like surprise seat upgrades, free tickets, annual birthday discounts, and more. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. All right, hashtag crew is here. Hembo, Cam, Bubba. Two things. First, so I posted on my Instagram this picture that I took of Jeff Saturday's breakfast. And I've got people, I sometimes think people just want to give me a hard time, telling me they don't think that's that big a breakfast. So I went back in and edited it so I could write out what the actual order is. So for those of you not looking at it, you can see it. It's on my Instagram, at ESPN Greeny with a Y on Instagram. It is a meat lover's omelet, a full meat lover's omelet, which has in it ham, sausage, and bacon. It is two fried eggs on the side of that, and then a double order, two orders of beef sausage, each of which look like a kielbasa to me. I mean, they are monstrous and split down the middle. That was his breakfast at 6:10 this morning. That showed up in the room. I, at the same time, was eating a small cup of fat-free Greek yogurt with some fresh blueberries and a little, like, nut mix. So that's what I'm eating, and that's what he's eating. Now, you tell me, Bubba, are you looking at the picture? Have you seen the picture?
Saw it, yep.
Is that or is that not a ridiculous breakfast for one person to eat?
Well, we are talking about a former NFL offensive lineman, so I think we do have to factor that in.
That's, hasn't played in 20 years.
I agree.
The guy weighs like 200 pounds now. He's like 15 pounds more than I do. Do you ever order a full omelet, like a meat lover's omelet, and two fried eggs on the side?
I think we still have to factor in. He's still an NFL player, so he's got that mindset when he's eating breakfast. Like he said, breakfast is his number one meal. He's going in with the NFL mindset, and I'm also going to say, I don't think it's that much. I'm on Jeff's side. I don't think it's that crazy.
Me too.
This is Cam?
Yep.
Not that crazy. So Cameron,
it looks good. I'd want to eat it right now.
I'm not saying I would eat as much as Jeff Saturday. I'm just saying I'm not surprised that Jeff Saturday eats that much.
It might be a little too much, but it's not insane.
It's not only the much. It's what it is.
Yeah, it's a lot of meat.
It's all meat and eggs. I mean, I looked at him. I said, do you have an artery open? I mean, that breakfast should come with an angioplasty.
How much protein is in there? Hembo, can you run the numbers on that?
I have a conspiracy theory on this.
What is it?
I don't think Jeff Saturday has actually turned in his retirement papers.
You think he's coming back to play?
Have you seen the state of offensive line play in the NFL right now?
Yeah.
And those guys always say, like, if you're just asking me to pass block, which is the only thing teams do anyway, he could actually fake it. He was a coach last year. Who's to say he couldn't come back and be a player coach? I don't think Jeff Saturday has officially closed the book on his playing career just based upon the fact that he's eating what he's eating, because that's not what an NFL analyst on TV would ever eat.
That's exactly right. Look, he already came back to coach one time. Let's see if he comes back to play. The other thing that I saw on social media that I think is kind of cute, my wife just sent this to me. It is from Awful Announcing on X. It is a picture of Taylor Swift cheering at a Chiefs game. And the caption is, Kansas City Chiefs fan named Time Person of the Year. So I guess what that means is the Time magazine has named Taylor Swift the Person of the Year. Had you seen that already?
I just had seen that news this morning.
Okay, yes. I had not. I think that's a fascinating and interesting choice. It's obviously cute the way they frame it as, you know, Chiefs fan wins. It's sort of like the Chicago Tribune did when Meghan Markle married Prince Harry. And they wrote, Northwestern graduate marries British guy. You know, those are sort of fun things. But one way or another, anyway, so Taylor Swift, known to this audience as Travis Kelce's girlfriend, I don't know, has been named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. All right. You want to be a part of Greeny Nation? You can be on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. It's not college football season without the delicious taste of an ice-cold Dr. Pepper, the one that fans deserve. I feel like we haven't talked about the Bears in a long time. Because they're just awful. They've been bad. They've been bad all season, and they went from being interestingly bad to being uninterestingly bad. They've entered that area. The Jets are in the same place. Like, they're just in an uninterestingly bad spot. And I have been under the impression, I'm not sure if impression is the right word, I have sort of viewed it as a fait accompli that they are going to tear everything down after the season ends. They're going to fire the coach and the coaching staff. Whether they fire the general manager or not, I think, remains to be seen. But they will certainly change coaches and change quarterbacks. But Justin Fields has, for lack of a better way of putting it, no chance of continuing there because they look overwhelmingly likely to get the first pick in the draft. They have Carolina's pick. And they will have their own pick, which will be, you know, I think right now it's fifth.
Yeah, 1 in 5 right now is what they're scheduled to be, yeah.
You know, so they'll have probably the first pick and another one that, let's say, is, you know, in the 5 to 10 range. So you can draft a young quarterback. You can draft a playmaker to go with him. If you wind up with like the 7th pick, you're probably not going to get Marvin Harrison, but you get yourself a good playmaker or an offensive lineman, whatever it is you want to go with him. You bring in a new coach and you start over again with a quarterback on a rookie salary contract. It has felt to me like a foregone conclusion that's what they're going to do, so much so I haven't even brought it up. When I asked Lewis Riddick about it today, he said he wouldn't be ready to give up on Justin Fields. What did you think of that?
I was very surprised because I've been operating under the assumption that the only reason Justin Fields is playing right now is for his next team and for his next contract on whatever that team is. I am, however, intrigued by Lewis's idea because let's live in a world in which a new coach has, you know, grand plans as far as how to harness Justin Fields' skill set, which we have acknowledged many times is a premium skill set. He is a world-class athlete with a bazooka who we saw star at the Ohio State University in the same offense that C.J. Stroud did. He's just been coached badly. Mm-hmm. Also, imagine a scenario in which the Bears trade the first pick in the draft, Caleb Williams or Drake May, and get a fortune for that pick. All of a sudden, you have an infrastructure of what could possibly be the best collection of young talent, talent on rookie contracts in the whole league. And if you have a coach that can harness Justin Fields, and you have an agent, in his case, who's willing to maybe accept less than 100 cents on the dollar to sign a team-friendly contract for the next 2, 3, 4 years, who's to say that's not a better methodology than sort of like...
So you're saying give Justin Fields the Daniel Jones contract?
I'm saying give Justin Fields the Daniel Jones contract, except that you'd have way more talent around him than Daniel Jones.
Oh, understood,
does.
But I'm just thinking of the contract.
It's a good example.
Okay, so here's the problem. The guts that would take, okay? The general manager, because here's your fear. I'm putting you in that seat now.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin Fields never does get that much better, and Caleb Williams winds up being Patrick Mahomes. You will be forever the guy who didn't do that. It has been my observation in 30 years of covering sports that more often than not, executives and coaches do the thing that is easiest to explain if it goes wrong.
Mm.
You are covering your backside, you are CYAing, or whatever that is, all the time. So it's very easy to explain. We took the quarterback because for all the reasons that everyone knows, we start the salary cap all over again. There's nothing better than a quarterback on a rookie contract. The kid's got all the talent in the world, won the Heisman. Everyone loves him. All the obvious reasons. Sticking with Fields is the much harder decision to make, right? I think
it's
the much harder one to explain if it goes sideways.
It's the much more difficult one to explain if it goes sideways. But self-scouting is also a really important thing for front offices to do. And if I'm running that team, I'm saying to myself, oh, we had the first pick last year. We could have taken C.J. Stroud, but we didn't. We already have a quarterback in-house that we've seen play at a high level in the NFL. Let's continue to build around him and make this roster absolutely jacked. Are you sure Caleb Williams is going to be great?
No, you can never be sure anybody is going to be
great.
Are you sure
Drake May is going to be great?
I'm sure that how good they wind up being will ultimately be determined more by the situations they're in than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I am sure that both of them have at minimum the ability to be good players if everything around them is good.
You do the draft every year. Are either of them demonstrably better prospects than Bryce Young? The first pick last year?
I think Caleb Williams is.
Demonstrably better.
Well, because there isn't the one obvious glaring question mark. Like, Bryce Young is so damn small. And I didn't look. I mean, so it's complicated for me because I'm the host of the draft. And when you're there and you see these kids and you see their families and you see what it means to them, like, I don't have it in me. I give Mel credit and all that. I don't have it in me to, like, spoil that moment for them. But my honest opinion is I wouldn't have taken, and this is not 2020 hindsight or anything like that. I said it at the time. I wouldn't have taken Bryce Young first in that draft if my life depended on it. I definitely would have traded that pick away as the Bears did and let someone else take that risk because, and I think that everything has gone wrong in that situation. And I know that a lot of people think now the owner is super meddlesome and maybe he is. I don't know one way or the other. But that's my point. Like, it's possible that a lot of things are going wrong around Bryce Young, but I would not have taken him first in that draft or in any draft because you cannot have a quarterback who is not 6 feet tall. You just can't do it.
Sure. What I'm doing right now is I'm looking at the MVP odds on ESPN Bet. I see a quarterback in Brock Purdy who is a seventh-round pick on a loaded roster. I see a second-round pick in Jalen Hurts who's on a loaded roster. I see a fourth-round pick in Dak Prescott who's on a loaded roster. How many examples do we need to be provided that say it's not just about the freaking quarterback? If you wind up loading up the Bears roster with studs across the top of two consecutive drafts, Justin Fields might become Jalen Hurts. The problem with the Bears is that they've never actually been able to play something out all the way through. It's not obvious to me that Caleb Williams or Drake May are going to be better than Justin Fields, especially if that circumstance in Chicago does not continue to improve. Like, the best way to build a football team is just by having a lot of really good players. Jalen Hurts was drafted, and he wasn't supposed to be the starter. Dak Prescott was drafted. Tony Romo was still the starter. Brock Purdy was drafted sort of like an accident, and we thought Trey Lance was going to be the starter. It's not just about the quarterback, and if the Bears had the audacity to pass on one of those two
new guys and build around Justin Fields, it might wind up being better in the long run.
Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Can I tell you why I think you are completely wrong?
Mm.
Do you know who the... I just opened up the list. Do you know who the last MVP of the league was who wasn't a first-round pick? Was Sean Alexander a first-round pick? Can you look that up?
Sure.
I don't even remember. He was the MVP in 2005. I'm going to read you. Oh, I'm sorry. I take it back. Tom Brady won one. So Brady was the sixth-round pick.
Brady won several.
But here are the last. I'm just going to read you the names of the MVPs.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again. I'm sorry.
Sean Alexander was a first-round pick.
Was a first-round pick. So here we go. Here are the MVPs. Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, that's 5-1. Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Adrian Peterson, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, that's 11-2. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, that's 13-3. LaDainian Tomlinson, Sean Alexander, Peyton Manning, Steve McNair, Peyton Manning. I mean, the MVPs of the league are first-round picks basically every single year. What you may be pointing out in this particular instance is that this year might be a huge outlier.
Maybe so.
And the 49ers are kind of like their own personal outlier.
Sure.
Everything they do makes no sense, and yet they wind up doing it better than anybody because – I think it's because their coach is just a freaking genius.
Yeah,
that's
he's great.
My opinion.
He's great.
But none of those guys were high picks. Like, Debo Samuel wasn't a first-round pick.
Mm-mm.
McCaffrey was.
Right? George Kittle was not.
What was Ayuk?
He was either a one or a two.
I don't even remember him coming out of college, to be honest with you.
This is his fourth year. He was a 25th overall pick in 2020.
Okay, so he was a first-round pick.
Yeah.
So the point here is that, I don't know, I wouldn't have the guts to do it. I would not have the... Now, first of all...
Am I presenting a good argument?
Yeah, of course. You're presenting a great argument. But it depends on one huge thing happening. Well, it almost depends on two things happening. If you're the Bears, let's actually look at it this way. If you are the Bears and you chose Mitchell Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes, I understand that... What are we, two regimes past that now? Like, none of the people left were there for that.
It was an entirely new infantry.
But my point is, that's part of the reason everyone involved has been fired, because if they drafted somebody ahead of Patrick Mahomes. Now, I personally think they could have ruined Patrick Mahomes too, but that's a different conversation. The point I'm making is, if the franchise that passed on Patrick Mahomes to take Mitchell Trubisky passes on Caleb Williams to stick with a guy who has shown you flashes, but no more than that, in 3 years... That takes guts.
Oh, I don't think they have it. I think that if you're looking at this through sober eyes, you could easily imagine a scenario in which we marry a coach to the quarterback that we have that has at least flashed. We at least have seen him play at a high level in the NFL. Yes, he's gotten hurt. Yes, he's inconsistent throwing the ball. Yes, a lot of things. But if I have the chance to stack my roster up and build around him, even though it might be a little gutsy, I think it might be smarter too.
All right. I like the thinking. Let's do sneaky Hembo trivia today. Go.
I want to talk a little baseball with the Yankees being at the epicenter of the winter meeting. So there are two players that have hit at least 100 home runs at new Yankee Stadium. The dates of 2009. Aaron Judge is obviously one. Who is the other?
The other Yankee who has hit at least 100 home runs in that stadium, which dates back to 2009. That's an excellent question. We'll come back with the answer after this word from Farm Fresh. Get real and keep it real this holiday season by buying real Christmas trees. Did you know that buying real Christmas trees helps save the American Christmas tree farming industry? For every 10 Christmas trees planted, an acre of land is saved, and so are American farmers' jobs. Plus, buying real Christmas trees helps keep real holiday memories alive while helping our environment. Buy real Christmas trees this holiday season at Lowe's or wherever Christmas trees are sold. Get more information online at GetRealKeepItReal.com. Back with the answer on ESPN Radio.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you on ESPN Radio. As we roll along here, Hembo's question is ready to go.
Wow, okay, and how are your trivia skills?
This is Sneaky Hembo Trivia.
Regular sneaky or extra sneaky?
My question today is this. Aaron Judge is one of two players who hit at least 100 home runs at New Yankee Stadium. New Yankee Stadium debuted in 2009. My question for you three is, who is the other?
All right, so I feel like because we call this Sneaky Hembo, The obvious answer is too obvious to me. So, like, I'm afraid to give what I think is the obvious answer because it just seems too easy.
Yeah.
Bubba, what are you going to say?
Yeah, we're just joking. We feel like you say that every time, and they're just wrong. But,
I think the obvious answer is A-Rod, right? I mean, Alex Rodriguez had 700 home runs in Major League Baseball, and he played well into this time. I mean, am I crazy, or shouldn't A-Rod be the answer to this?
Yes, but you say that a lot, and then you guess the obvious answer, and then you're like, oh, it was sneaky, Hembo. I forgot.
Well, but I don't have a better idea.
Yeah, no.
I don't think it's
Giancarlo
Stanton.
This is a tough one.
Yeah, Giancarlo's
like
one of the first names
I
came up.
He's only played 11 games.
Right,
yeah.
That's what I mean. He has not played enough. I'm going to
Giancarlo Stanton hit more in other ballparks.
Yeah. A lot of this is a tough one for sure. I am going to go to the early days of new, and I'm going to go with our old friend Mark Teixeira.
Ooh. Oh, that's a good one.
That's also Brandon's guess.
That is a good one. Not my guess. I'm going with Curtis Granderson.
Curtis Granderson.
Mets legend.
All right, we got one vote for Granderson. We got two votes for Teixeira. We got one vote for A-Rod, and the answer is?
You're on the mark, Teixeira.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow. Attaboy, Bubs.
There you go.
Bubba and Brandon. Good. Bubba gets one. Brandon gets one. All right, well done.
In the Yankee Stadium, Teixeira has 113. A-Rod has 72, and Granderson had 69.
A-Rod only hit 72 home runs starting in 2009?
That's right. You gotta remember
how many home runs did he hit in 2009?
In 2009, A-Rod hit 30 home runs. You got to remember, though, he missed a full season
right.
of the biogenesis stuff.
Of course.
And basically had one 7-homer season and one 9-homer season, too. So he missed a lot of time at the end of his career.
No, I get that. But, I mean, what happened to 2010 and 11 and all those years?
He hit 30, never more than 30.
Okay,
years.
But you only need to hit 230 home run seasons, and now you're within.
Yeah, but at Yankee Stadium.
Only at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, only at Yankee Stadium.
Just in the stadium.
Oh, it's just in the stadium.
I mean, it wouldn't have changed the answer that much, though. You're just multiplying by two in most cases.
No, I understand, but I should have thought.
I don't think you do understand.
Do you think you should have guessed it? Did the share cross your mind?
No, Giancarlo Stanton crossed
okay.
my mind. How close is Stanton?
He was tied with Granderson, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what are our scores now, Cam?
I am 14-26. Bubba's creeping up on me. Bubba's had a couple good weeks. 12-28. Greeny is 9-31. Brandon, first win in a while at 4-13. Sorry, Brandon. Mark Cuban is 0-1, as is Dominique Foxworth.
Okay. Those are the standings. And by the way, since we're talking about a little baseball here, let's do it.
I'm ready to go right now.
Green light, green light with Greeny.
There's one huge question that is going to be answered, and that is that maybe the biggest international star in sport, well, one of the biggest international stars in sports. I think my perspective on this is skewed because I was in Japan this summer, and to try to describe the magnitude of Shohei Ohtani's stardom in Japan is difficult to do. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know what it would be like to walk around in Buenos Aires and how many pictures of Leo Messi you would see or Cristiano Ronaldo in Portugal or whatever it might be. Let's put it this way. There is no – Shohei Ohtani is one of the biggest stars in American sports, and there is no star in American sports as big as Ohtani is in Japan. But whatever. I digress. What the hell is happening with him?
Nothing and everything. This is one of the weirder free agencies we have ever seen because we're talking about, by a long shot, the most popular player in baseball reaching free agency, which, by the way, never happens. And everything is under the guise of secrecy. Right now, it's believed that the Dodgers, Angels, Cubs, Giants, and Blue Jays are the finalists, but we don't really know anything because for some reason it's very, very important to Ohtani and his representation that we don't know anything for reasons unbeknownst to us. Buster only has a really good column up right now on ESPN.com saying, effectively, this is a bad thing for baseball. We should be celebrating this process, and instead, everything is hush, hush. But Greeny, I think we can actually go back to 2017 when he came over from Japan as sort of a peek into what he might prioritize, what he might care about. You might recall at that time, if he had just waited two more years, he could have gotten $100 million more in the big leagues, but he decided to come early because he just wanted to start his clock. He could have also gotten way more money from the Rangers or the Mariners than he did with the Angels. What I'm saying is Ohtani is not going to prioritize how much money is in his next contract above all else. He earned $40 million off the field last year.
Right.
There is a variety of factors that are going to be at play here, and very few of them have to do with how many commas are in his contract.
I have to ask you an entirely separate question. When you say he earned $40 million, is that just in the U.S.?
I'm talking about the stuff that was reported in terms of his off-the-field earnings, endorsements, and things
that
of that
feels
nature.
Super low to me.
Me too.
Super low.
This was on Sportico.
That might literally just be American dollars.
Maybe
that might just be what he made in off-the-field income in the U.S.
People as popular and famous as him care about power and influence and gravity. And more I learn and read about Shohei Ohtani, he's pretty different. He's pretty Aaron Rodgers-y. I wouldn't be
meaning
at all.
What? Like, what is that?
What I mean is,
what kind of difference?
He marches to the beat of his own drum. I don't think we should assume anything about what he wants. I don't think we should assume that he wants to go to a winner. I don't think we should assume what climate he wants to play in. I don't think we should assume that he's going to take the biggest offer. I don't think we should assume anything. What I think Shohei Ohtani wants, and I'm just guessing based on the very little bit that I know and have heard, I think he's going to want as much of a say in the organization that he winds up on as any baseball player has ever had. Not just in terms of like, oh, this is the program I want to abide by over the next decade because I'm a unicorn, but perhaps even personnel, perhaps even ownership stake. Things like that to me are on the table.
Certainly could be. As far as the idea, because I was just reading through what Buster wrote here.
It's interesting.
The idea that this is bad. Let me read it because it's interesting and we love Buster. Buster writes, his short journey through free agency could have been a celebration of baseball. Ohtani has more leverage than any player ever. Everybody wants him, and everybody wants to give him a lot of money. This really should all be fun, generating excitement among baseball fans dreaming of Ohtani in the lineup of their favorite team. Instead, his decision is being handled like delicate negotiations over a secret spy swap. There is silence and threats, with club executives rolling their eyes as they describe the warnings they've been given from Ohtani's camp about publicly discussing their their efforts to sign the most dynamic and popular talent on earth. One general manager laughingly said, quote, sorry, can't talk about the guy everybody is talking about. I did see that Dave Roberts, the manager of the Dodgers, acknowledged that they met and this was deemed a very big deal. Like, it may ruin it. I don't know anything about that. Is there some reason why culturally this is different? Like, it's not, you know, again, I mean, he's from a different country that may have very different philosophies on things like this. I don't know that.
It's actually an interesting question I've not considered. Like, my dad's from Beirut, Lebanon. In his culture, it's like, we don't talk about money at all, how much we earn, how we get, any of those things.
Right.
It could definitely be a cultural thing. It could also be an Ohtani thing. Like, when I say he's very Aaron Rodgers-y, it feels like the Jets' pursuit of Aaron Rodgers. Like, you would just find out little things here and there. There was the attack on reporters when they would find out things, when they would get his number. Like, it's very much like that. And Ohtani is very much like that. Very tunnel vision. Very, very, very conscious of his image and everything surrounding it.
I get it. And he is a megastar and deserves to be. He's a unicorn. He's all that stuff. Oh, I'm throwing in all of the caveats.
Yeah.
Love him, love him, love him, love him.
Mm-hmm.
Is he ever going to pitch again?
Yeah.
You think so?
He's going to pitch again. I'm confident that he's going to pitch again. But I think a big part of why he has still not decided who he's going to play for next is because it's very, very important to him that wherever he goes, he can dictate how often he pitches and what his rehab schedule is going to look like in every single little thing. And to such an extent, I can understand. And when you have all the leverage in the world like he has, he can say, you're going to abide by what I think we should do, or I'm not going to sign with your team. And that is leverage that no baseball player has ever had. I mean, We're talking about a guy who's going to be as powerful a figure in your organization as anybody in sports. It's going to be Aaron Rodgers like with the Jets.
I was just about to say, it is another way in which this is Aaron Rodgers-esque. So, all right, very interesting. Is there any way of guessing when this will get determined?
It could be tomorrow. It could be next year.
We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to Greeny, the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcast.